Welcome back to the Roundtable on WAMC. It's 8:08 on a Friday morning. Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue. It's a little early for the Roundtable, but special coverage today begins at 9:30 of the cloture vote in the Senate for the moving ahead of the vote for Supreme Court Justice, or soon to be perhaps Supreme Court Justice, Brett Kavanaugh. So we are convening the Roundtable panel an hour early today. And again, don't panic if you're on the way to work. You are not late yet. With us so far, and again, it's all been a little bit sketchy that the NPR coverage hours have changed, and we had panelists who were going to be here who couldn't be here suddenly, and now we have some who will be here. I can tell you right now that in the studio with us is WAMC's Alan Chartok.
Well, hello, big guy.
Nice to have you here, sir. And also, just waltzing in, Chris Churchill from the Times Union. Thank you for being here.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Little early for you, eh?
I'm a little grumpy at this time of the morning.
Yeah, fair enough. I'm grumpy most of the time.
Yeah, that's why they call you Uncle Grumpy.
And we will have people arriving here momentarily.
Stepping in.
Supposedly.
Before we get down to the business at hand, I do want to mention that the lockbox is open today. And we want to just mention that the fund drive starts in about a week, and we want to fill that lockbox.
Well, we got to have half the money. We'd love to have half the money. In the last couple of days, we have had people who said, okay, here's a challenge. I'll give you $5,000 if you can make $25,000. And that's it. There's no more $5,000.
Right.
We made it each time. So now the question is, what do we do? Well, there's the responsible thing to do, you know, which is to say, okay, look, folks, here we're going to tell you the truth. We've always been honest with you. Saturday and Sunday, I think the key word is, is that allowed? No, maybe not.
What?
Well, there's certain words meaning that, you know, a Jewish word, bupkis, you know. That,
sure.
You
know, that's a delicious breakfast cake,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Well, it's babka.
In other words.
I'm sorry.
In other words, on Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and believe it or not, on Columbus Day, those are bad fundraising days.
Okay.
We're not here to do it. So here's the best I can do. A wonderful person has pledged $1,000. Now, it's not $5,000, but I want you to think about this. If you were to count out $1,000 in 20s and try to put them in your wallet. You've done that a lot, haven't you, Ray? Yeah.
Not around here.
Okay. You've done that a lot. And I know Judy Patrick, who is now joining us in the studio, has done that a lot, too. $1,000 in 20, you put 20s, you put it in your wallet. That's a lot. Okay. Now what happens is somebody is putting up $1,000. Anonymous is putting up $1,000. It's not $5,000. Says, oh, well, I'm not going to pledge because it's... No, it's just to keep us on track.
Yeah.
We need to make $25,000 by the time we do this thing this morning.
So till 9:30.
9:30, that's right, Uncle. And that's what it is.
Okay.
And if we get that, do we have a total yet? You don't even have a total in front of you?
No. I'm the guest host.
Boy Scouts.
I'm
be
like
prepared.
David Brenner on this program. I just waltz in, I do the program.
Just David Brenner.
By the way, if somebody wanted to pledge, they would go to what website, sir?
WAMC.org. WAMC.org. Now, I don't know how many people are here. Usually people don't show up till 9.
Yeah.
So there may not be anybody to answer the phones because you could try. And that would be 1-800-323-9262. But much better right now is to go to WAMC.org and say, Alan, we're all in this together.
Yeah.
We're going to put this out here.
Right. And write that down. Don't just say it. Put it in the comments.
Yeah. What
Otherwise,
do you mean?
You won't be able to hear it.
Huh?
That's okay. WAMC.org is the website. We have a lockbox logo there. You can see how we're doing as far as the overall total. And by the way, the overall total is $333,791.
That's pretty good.
That ain't hay.
The good news is, how much again?
$333,791.
The bad news is that's about 165 less to go before we get to that midpoint, $500,000 in the lockbox, which will allow us to do the show so by the time it's all over, you know, you'll be able to listen to WAMC and get all of the news. and we'll do it in a day as opposed to doing it in, as we used to, 2 weeks to make a couple of $100,000.
So WAMC.org is the place to go. We have the roundtable panel here today. Alan Shartok.
It's growing. It's right before our eyes.
Chris Churchill. Judy Patrick is now here, Vice President for Editorial Development at New York Press Association.
Vice President?
Very, very, very good indeed. And you can always email us. I know a lot of people have already been emailing about the Kavanaugh nomination, and the email address is panel@WAMC.org. Try to keep your letters brief, to the point, on topic. Don't include links. Impossible to click them on the air. We get printouts, so you really can't click that. Don't use abbreviations. Proofread your emails, and one per day per customer, if you would.
And keep it civil, for goodness sakes.
Yeah. Panel@WAMC.org. The Senate is poised to take a crucial vote today on whether to advance Brett Kavanaugh's nomination to the Supreme Court, as key Republican senators remain undecided. The 53-year-old judge made sort of like a closing argument yesterday in the Wall Street Journal. Said, I said a few things I should not have said. It was an op-ed published last night, but he said he remains the same hardworking, even-keeled person he's always been. Going forward, you can count on me, he wrote in the Wall Street Journal. Republicans are confident that the FBI investigation into the allegations unearthed no new corroborating details. There's a level of uncertainty as Senator Collins, Senator Flake spent hours yesterday going over FBI documents in the secure room at the Senate. This is a procedural vote today to end the debate. I guess the debate, Chris Churchill, the actual vote in the full Senate will be tomorrow.
Let's try to get this straight just so that everybody understands. Yeah. Oh, and here it is. The challenge is $1,000 from Ann Wydra of Ravenna. And Wydra of Ravenna put $1,000 up. That's a lot of money.
You betcha.
Let's honor her. Okay, let's go back to what we were talking about here. So what we're looking at, of course, is a mess. But right now, today, just so you'll understand, at 9:30, we're going to bring you the vote. You're going to hear it live. Is the whole concept of ending debate has to be done by cloture. We used to call it closure, but now it's cloture.
With a T.
And what it means is you got to vote to end debate. That's going to happen today. Mm-hmm. And so there can't be a filibuster in the Senate. And who came up with that idea? The Democrats did.
Harry Reid.
When they were trying to get their own stuff passed before. I'll bet somebody's knocking himself in the head on that one. Okay, so now on Saturday they hope to do it. At least one senator is not showing up, and I admire him. He's a pro-Kavanaugh guy, but he's not showing up because he said that it's his daughter's wedding, and I am going to my daughter's wedding. It's more important than doing this other thing.
That a Supreme Court.
Yeah.
Really?
Well, I think it is. I think the guy's got guts.
Well, that makes me think that they've got the votes. They would reschedule the vote otherwise.
Well, they say they may have to reschedule a vote, Judy. I don't know.
But there's no indication they're going to at this point.
They're not
going
to let it go down because somebody had to go to a wedding. I find that very hard.
Well, it's not just any wedding. Come on, Chris.
Well,
at the point at which you're as old as I am, and you know, somebody getting married in your family.
Weddings are very important events, and
not
if it was
just
my
weddings,
child's,
your daughter's wedding.
Yeah, I would certainly want to be there, but I think that they would just reschedule the vote. Wouldn't you think so?
Yes. No, not only wouldn't I think so, I know so. They've already said so.
It would be pretty ironic if everything that's happened in the last however many weeks just ended because a guy was at a wedding and he couldn't make it to the vote.
But there are 1,000 excuses. I mean, if a guy says, I'm not coming because I have to go to my daughter's wedding, could really mean because, my wife took a look at me and said, hey, you miss your daughter's wedding. That's something that you're going to have to live with for the rest of your life. As opposed to maybe it would be a good way to get out of this mess.
Well, let's be frank. These undecided senators aren't really undecided. They haven't been undecided for a week.
I couldn't agree more with you. Then could you explain to all of us what you mean? You think that they're a bunch of hypocrites?
No, I don't think they're a bunch of hypocrites.
I
think that they were afraid to come out and say how they really wanted to vote. I think that they did this 1 week investigation to try to quell the waters and to give them a little bit of cover for when they actually voted.
I'm not sure about that. I wouldn't be that surprised if Jeff Flake or Susan Collins voted no. I really wouldn't be. I mean, I think it's entirely possible.
A week ago, Flake said he was going to vote yes, and then he just asked for this week so he could get more information. I think he wanted to...
Cover.
Cover.
Because everybody was saying, how can you vote when you haven't heard from key people? And apparently Mark Judge was the one person that they think they needed to hear from. They went into their little closed facility yesterday morning and said, oh, well, he cleared them, so I think we're good to vote. That's my
thought. Well, you actually took it all seriously, see, Judy. I didn't.
My mistake again.
Yeah, that is your mistake. I mean, you're right about three-quarters of it, which is that there's no question that they knew what they were going to do. I think Uncle Grumpy was right when he said it was cover. They were looking for cover, so they say, well, we call for investigation. But you were right. They knew what they were going to do.
And at the end of the day, is the American public any less or more certain about where they should stand on this issue? Mm. No, because the results of the investigation are such a big secret.
As they have to be. I mean, that's the rule, right?
But the one thing that keeps coming up is that all of the pollsters are saying that this Kavanaugh thing has re-energized the Republican base. Which I made a point yesterday that I think there's a certain irony here, if that's not an overused word. And that is, if Kavanaugh is confirmed, that will satisfy the Republican base, and they may go back into the stupor. Whereas if he is not confirmed, they'll turn out in the election. Are you following me?
Totally, following you. I mean, you could make a pretty good argument that the Republicans are a lot better off going into the midterms if Kavanaugh is not confirmed.
Yeah,
right.
That's right.
Yeah,
and they had and
because
Chris,
the base, not only the base, the entire party will be enraged, and they will turn up at the polls, and they will guarantee that the Republicans keep the Senate.
Chris Churchill, this is one of the reasons why you are a great columnist. And do you notice that at the end of the columns, there is always a chance that you can react. Say, here's Chris Churchill's address.
Mm-hmm.
And I always, when there's a good one, I always say, good job, Chris.
You do.
Do you ever respond and say, thank you, Alan? No.
Yes, I do.
I never got one.
Yeah. You don't check your email closely enough, or it's going either.
You know, and the other point about the Republicans is if Kavanaugh gets appointed to the court, then that's been one of the things that they want most of all. So when they get that majority on the Supreme Court, they're less interested in voting.
I'm not sure that everybody on both sides isn't completely ramped up now. I think everybody's energized. I think you'll see a lot of turnout at the midterms.
Well, but that's what's different, though, right? Because before this all happened, it was really only the Democrats that were energized, and the Republicans. Republicans, since Trump's election, have been a bit divided. There are people who are enthusiastic about Trump. There are Republicans who are like, oh, all right, he's all right. And then there's people who just downright dislike him. What's happened in the last week is that the people who downright dislike him have joined forces. Like Brett Stevens of the New York Times, a columnist there, wrote a column saying, for the first time, I'm glad that Trump is in our public life. I mean, it's united the right in ways that few other things really could.
And Brett Stevens is a conservative columnist.
Yeah, he's a conservative columnist. He came over from the Wall Street
Uber
Journal.
Uber conservative.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, it's a good column to read. You know, I hate to say this about my fellow citizens, but they have a very short attention span, and it's three or four weeks. 3 or 4 weeks is a long
time.
It's
about 30 days.
I do. Yeah, yeah, I agree. If this will be a kind of a distant memory by the time the election comes around.
I'm not sure
if he's not confirmed. If it's not still ongoing.
Right.
Yeah.
I do think. Do we have somebody else here?
No.
Oh, it's Amber. Hello, Amber.
Unless Amber is.
Oh, my heavens. Okay.
Okay.
This is Fun Drive News, and we might as well take care of reminding
just
people
one second
about the Fun Drive.
Okay. Now, if you got your stopwatch in your hand, a couple of people keep the stopwatch on us. Just remember, we have been talking about the Supreme Court nomination. We're going to say very quickly that Ann Wydra of Ravenna has said, hey, I'm willing to put $1,000 up if you can make this $25,000 by the end of the show today, which is what, an hour and a half, right?
We have until 9:30 when NPR special coverage begins.
And right now we don't have a total, but
we do. It's right there on that sheet. Amber just brought it for you.
Okay, so but I need to know because I'm not good at math.
No.
I need to know exactly how much we have made this morning. That's what I need to know. Okay.
Okay. All right. I'll calculate for you.
Well, Chris Churchill, who's not used to getting up this early, is having his black coffee.
I'm usually
right now.
Up. I'm just not usually
and
out.
And he came in with such
civil society.
Such a grimace on his face. Yeah. But now that he's put a little fuel into him, he's actually got a smile.
And so far in the panel, and it's a rolling panel at this point. We're not sure who will be here.
or who might walk out.
Chris Churchill of Times Union, Judy Patrick of the New York Press Association, and WAMC's Alan Chartok. Democrats, of course, complaining the investigation, which ran just 6 days, was shoddy. It omitted interviews with numerous potential witnesses. Chuck Grassley said the FBI reached out to 11 people. 10 of them were interviewed. White House spokesman said what critics want is a never-ending fishing expedition into high school drinking.
And on the other hand, the Democrats, including Chuck Schumer, whose cousin, distant cousin, got arrested.
Amy Schumer.
Yeah, yesterday. They're saying it was a shoddy election job, and they were given bad instructions by the White House of who to go to and who not to go to. We kept getting different reports, and they knew they were in a little trouble over it because they kept expanding. Trump was saying, they can go wherever they want, but who believes Trump about anything?
Yeah, but the Democrats were going to be honest, they were going to say it was a sham no matter what.
You think?
Yeah, unless they came back and declared definitively that Kavanaugh was a rapist, they were going to say wasn't thorough enough, or unless it took so long that, it went past the midterms. I mean, I think, like you kind of alluded to at the beginning, both parties, with their response to this report is pretty predictable. It was predictable the Republicans were going to say it was thorough and a good job, and that the Democrats were going to say it was shoddy.
Okay, yeah, but I want to go to Judy.
I also think the Republicans had a point in this, uber focus on how many kegs of beer he might have drunk when he was 17 years old. I think that that missed the point entirely. I think that if they had just focused, I understand that there was some drive to say maybe he blacked out and didn't remember his alleged sexual assault on Christine Blasey Ford, but I think it became so broad, it became an easy reason for the Republicans to attack the Democratic effort.
And I think that's why it ended up uniting Republicans so strongly. I think that some Democrats and some media outlets went too far. I mean, a hyper focus on whether or not somebody, threw ice at somebody in a bar 35 years ago. Just, I think, to a lot of people, seemed beyond the point.
Which is interesting because I don't know if you were listening to y'all were listening to NPR this morning, but they had this woman, I believe, from The Atlantic on who gave a very interesting speech about this has the problem of maybe going too far. And people's, now this is not Alan speaking, just saying that what this has done is to open up a national debate on the whole issue. Look, somebody attacks somebody that I know, I'm going to be very angry about it. But the argument is, and I think, Chris, you've just sort of alluded to it, that there's got to be due process.
Yeah, I mean, this isn't a court hearing, right? What I was trying to say is that, I mean, you had the allegation of sexual assault, but so much of this stuff has gone so far beyond the allegation and is really focused on, a high schooler and his stupid behavior. Well, a lot of people, including myself, behaved
really
stupidly. Yeah, I mean, that doesn't make you, doesn't mean that you sexually assaulted anybody. I mean, high school kids behave stupidly. They write stupid things in their yearbook. And I do think that when the focus of all this shifted from Dr. Ford to all this other stuff, I think that there was, at least within the Republican ranks, a real shift or at least a building anger.
Thanks, Chris Churchill. And over to Judy Patrick. Over to Judy Patrick now. What did you think about what Chris just said?
I agreed. In fact, when you listen to some of the Republican senators yesterday defending Judge Kavanaugh, they would say, "My God, they accused him of gang rape." Well, I don't remember anybody accusing him of gang rape.
The third person, Swetnick.
Yeah. But she didn't accuse him exactly of gang.
That's
she said
right.
she was gang raped while he was in the house.
Well, her story shifted. At one point, it seemed like it was that he was the one putting the drugs in the punch or whatever, and then she saw him, I think she said she saw him lined up. I mean, these things shouldn't even be repeated because there's they don't make much sense. But he was essentially accused of being a serial gang raper.
You know, interestingly though, but at the end of the day, when people started to come around and say they supported or that they denounced his bid, former Supreme Court Judge
John Paul Stevens.
He came out last night. He wasn't talking about sexual assault. He was talking about the things he said of a partisan nature before the committee. So that seems like an easier way to say he shouldn't be on the court rather than the sexual assault.
And he made that point. He said exactly that, Judy. And I think he's right. I don't know that he's right about the assault business, but I do know that it was an unbelievable display when he got up there and started yelling about the Clintons and the Democrats and how they were targeting him. And that is going to cost him dearly every time he makes a decision for the rest of his life.
Oh, I think that could be the thing that if Susan Collins or Jeff Flake do vote, do decide to vote against him, I think that they could cite that. They could cite the temperament issue, the partisanship. And if you read that Wall Street Journal piece that Kavanaugh wrote, that's what he addresses. So he must think that there's a weakness there, that he essentially apologizes for saying things he probably shouldn't have said, but says, in the heat of the moment, the emotion of the moment, I said things I shouldn't have said.
Well, we know that he was under instruction from the president to do exactly that, to go be tough. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I'm sorry, Alan, but we do have to take a break for the news here.
Okay.
And I want to remind you, the lockbox is open. Go to WAMC.org and make your pledge now. We are getting ready for the on-air fund drive, which is Monday, October 15th at 6 a.m. And we'll also read some of your letters coming up on the other side of the news panel at WAMC.org.
Again, 1-800-323-9262 if you're lucky enough to get somebody standing by.
All right.
Otherwise, WAMC.org. And let me tell you, we've got to make it. We've got to do it to shorten. We have to be on the air. We can't be raising money all the time.
Well, looky here. It's a very early edition of the Roundtable, 8:36 on a Friday morning. Ray in for Joe today, and we have the panel in session already. Chris Churchill is here from the TU, Judy Patrick from the New York Press Association, WAMC's Alan Chartok, and we welcome in somebody who has actually just arrived, and it's Aaron Pasitti, Siena College economics professor. Welcome, sir.
Good morning.
Nice to have you here.
Likewise.
You didn't get the memo about starting at 8 today?
I got it at like 8 last night.
Okay.
So I like to say
you need 12 hours?
Yeah, 12
okay,
hours.
Okay, well, fine.
24-hour notice is required.
I'm awake. I'm just not, at my peak.
Yeah, so. You're all saying the same thing.
Fashionably and unprofessionally late.
I have very little sympathy for any of you.
Mm. And this is news because?
If you want sympathy, you should go to the dictionary. And I'll tell you which words you could find your sympathy between.
Alan Chartok here, the friendly and America's pal, is with us. And Alan, you have
that's
some important...
Thanks for coming in early.
All right, I'm out of here. See you guys later. Yeah.
You have some important information.
I do. First of all, our very good friend Ann Wydra of Ravina has said, hey, I'll give you $1,000 of my money. Everybody put yourself into her place and say, $1,000 of my money if you can make $25,000 by the end of this abbreviated program. That's not going to be easy unless everybody gets going. We are all hoping that you recognize that by doing this, you support the radio station and you support your right to hear everything that's going on without any fund drive. So we'll have a one-day fund drive if you participate, if everybody participates, otherwise not. Thank you, Ann. I want to thank you. In addition, I just want everybody to know WMC is hosting a live broadcast of the Roundtable panel at the Linda, WMC's Performing Arts Studio. And Joe and I will be hosting it, and Mike Spain, Malcolm Nance, Judith Ink, Sarah Rogerson, Jen Smith, David Soares, and others will be there to answer your questions for that time. It's a breakfast, and it'll open at 8:15, and you'll mingle with the panel, and there will not be physical tickets for the event. Your name will be on a will call list at the door the morning of the event. There's only 200 of them, and at least half of them are gone now. And that is Wednesday, November 7th, from 8:15 to 11.
And how much of a pledge do we
need? $100 a person.
$100 a person.
Yeah.
And you can do that right now at WAMC.org.
You could. And by the way, if there's not a thing on the drop-down menu, just put it in the comments section.
All right. Very good. WAMC.org.
Thanks. Ray. Uncle Corby.
David Gillespie left some time ago. It's Ray now.
Gillespie left?
Yeah. Nice. The email address is panel@wamc.org. If you have comments on our discussion here this morning, and we have some letters to read.
Well, we've raised $2,000.
Well, right, that's good.
Now. No, it's not good. If everybody of the 500,000 listeners we have were to do something right now, we'd be saved. I tell you, saved. S-A-V-E-D, saved.
Well, all right, so do it now.
Yeah. Okay, so you were going to say?
Well, I just mentioned that we have an email address, panel@wamc.org, and listeners are invited to share their thoughts, and Alan will read some now.
From Mark Rosenthal on the Kavanaugh question. Let's not forget that Kavanaugh's rant at the hearing was not a heat-of-the-moment thing. It was a prepared statement, something he thought about and wrote down. Well, he said so. He certainly said that that was the case. Some of it seemed pretty extemporaneous, didn't it, Chris?
I don't know. It's hard to know. Yeah, a little bit. Some of it did.
We do know that the President of the United States said you got to go out there and do that. So,
he was probably going down before he did. So it turned out to be, at least in the short term, strategically smart.
Because he got those Republican supporters.
Yeah, I think the Republicans were wavering, and then he kind of rallied them.
Okay, that's good. And Carl says, Kavanaugh. I'm tired and exhausted from the daily Trump shows since his announcement for the presidency. I'm waiting for November 6th, where I will vote often and early. Not much I can do. Not much I can do until then.
Afford that one of the FBI.
Look forward to your daily banter, and that's Carl.
Thanks, Carl.
Okay, and Peter says, Kavanaugh vote, Republicans have and always have had a much better long game than the Democrats. Strategically, even if they lose some seats in Congress, they will have installed another right-wing ideologue onto the court that will help their long-term goal of taking over the country forever. Why the non-plutocrats believe this is in their best interest boggles the mind, and that's from Peter. And then Jeff says, by the way, anybody wants to say anything about any of these, just jump right in, okay? All right, I want you to know that.
Chris is now glaring at Alan. Leave Chris alone.
Did I do something wrong?
Well.
Okay. Thank you including Chris Churchill on the panel.
Well, there you go.
He gave today's panel balance and unpartisan reasoning, and that's Jeff from New Paltz. That's a compliment for you, Chris.
Thank you, Jeff.
Yeah. Well.
What?
Okay. And then Professor Don of Trump mocks Ford. Donald Trump has mocked the Gold Star family of a slain Muslim soldier. Donald Trump has mocked a reporter with a disability. Tuesday night at a rally in Mississippi, Donald Trump mocked the testimony of Dr. Christine Blasey Ford, and his comments were met with laughter and applause from the crowd of deplorables. Trump implied that when it came to allegations of sexual abuse of women, Judge Kavanaugh and the young men of America, in quotes, were the victims. Trump's twisted perspective suggests that Dr. Ford's allegations against Judge Kavanaugh can never get a fair disposition by the Trump administration, and also puts the impartiality of the FBI investigation at risk. I think there's something to that.
Yeah.
Barbara says, the Republican powers want Kavanaugh on the Supreme Court. That is their priority, not a midterm election. And that's Barbara from Longmeadow. I've been saying that all along. That's what I truly believe. What, there's more here?
Yes, sir.
Okay, I'll read these two. And Peter, Kavanaugh supporters are conflating two concepts, lack of collaboration and false accusation. They use these phrases interchangeably. If something is uncorroborated, it doesn't mean it's false. That's true.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's inconclusive.
What do you think, Judy?
And I think as I'm listening to all this testimony or all this discussion, I'm thinking, what level of collaboration would satisfy people? And the other point is, Republicans will say, you know, we could have handled this privately. Christine Blasey Ford could have been interviewed privately. Well, if that happened, they would have said, you know, nothing here, and we never would have known any of this.
Yep.
Well, we don't know that. You're making a hypothetical.
I am making a hypothetical, but
that is what she wanted too. I think when this is all said and done, people are going to look back at this whole ugly disaster of a process and wonder, like, you know, what happened exactly? And I think that's one of the things that they'll look back on. I mean, this is a woman who wanted to remain anonymous, and her name, she became a household name. You know, it's, I don't know for the next victim who wants to remain anonymous? What lesson do they draw from this?
And again, I haven't talked to Christine Blasey Ford, so I don't know what level of anonymity she wanted, but I think she just wanted to tell her story to someone. But she didn't want to be interviewed by the whole committee. She didn't want Brett Kavanaugh to know she was out there making this accusation. I think she said, "This happened to me. Can you do something about it?" But she didn't want to be. I don't think that she really wanted to be part of the privacy. Process even privately interviewed, because she didn't. That's a really big step, and it's scary.
Well, she's jumping into a shark tank with Trump's, you know, previous actions and what he said about sexual assault and sexual offenders. Mm. That I don't blame her for not wanting to jump into this giant boiling cauldron of acid.
The average person doesn't want to be on live TV in front of an audience. I mean, when he said there's 500,000 people listening, I almost, decided to stop totally.
I said a month.
But, you know, that takes a lot of guts for somebody, for one woman to come up and throw a wrench into a Supreme Court justice nomination. That's a lot of weight on her shoulders, in addition to the, whatever personal, issues and trouble she's having with this, so...
And Leah says, Brett Kavanaugh, thanks for the insightful discussions every day. Beyond the accusations against Brett Kavanaugh, I feel that if someone feels inclined to lie about their teenage behavior, that says volumes about their character. Many of us were not exactly angels in our youth. We grow up and laugh about how reckless and rude we were, to not admit that we've all been there and paint himself as a choir boy who occasionally had a beer, please, from Leah.
I don't think that's exactly accurate, though. I mean, he didn't say he occasionally had a beer. He said...
I like beer.
He said, I like beer.
I still like beer.
He also said, there were times when I drank too many beers and I, acted foolishly, and I acted in ways that I'm not proud of. I don't... Mm-hmm. Some of the stuff that's... A lot of what he said is being misrepresented in press reports. And
there's been no indication that he's had any of these problems in the last 30 years. Yeah. Nothing, at least, that's come forward.
Mm. All right, one more and then take a quick break.
Okay,
here.
Kavanaugh not qualified. Good morning, Hannah. The biggest disqualifying issue in Kavanaugh's profile that's provable is his political partisanship and obvious inability to be fair and impartial jurist. No candidate with his level of partisanship and disdain for opposing views should be seated on the country's highest court. Patently, he is not qualified. Now, that one, that's from Captain Bill. I agree with that.
John Paul Stevens about said that.
Yeah.
Let's take a quick break here, and then we'll get back to the letters.
But let's remember, the piggy bank is open here.
True.
And we've...
You may be asking yourself, why is the roundtable panel on in the 8 o'clock hour here at 8:48 on a Friday morning? Well, the answer is NPR will be providing special coverage of Senate cloture vote activities today, beginning at 9:30, and the vote is scheduled about 10:30. So there'll be some expert analysis from NPR.
Well, we are early. Just look at Chris Churchill's face. He's somewhere between...
He's a print journalist. He got in at 4:30 in the morning. The panel is here. Chris Churchill is here. Alan Chartok, Judy Patrick, Aaron Pasitti. You can, of course, join us at panel@wamc.org. By the way, while all this is going on, the lockbox challenge is going on as well.
$1,000.
Right.
It's not $5,000. It's $1,000. Oh, well, I'm not going to do anything because it's only $1,000. $1,000. Think about this, folks. What if you gave $1,000 in 20s? Try to get that in your wallet. Yeah, not doable.
Why don't you give me $1,000 and we'll give it a shot?
Yeah. Not doable. Okay. Jeannie says, Kavanaugh, people say we need due process after ignoring that our entire culture has been set up to deny women due process. Why don't women come forward more? Tens of thousands of untested rape kits should answer that question. It's a scary time to be a man in America, in quotes. Conveniently ignores how scary it has always been to be a woman. This culture of rape and assault is like the air we breathe, barely noticed and hardly mentioned. Howard says, guilty until proven innocent. Whatever you think of Kavanaugh, it's ridiculous that the Republicans keep talking about how the Democrats are making him guilty until proven innocent. No one is proposing to take away from him anything he already has, like his freedom, his current job, or money. He's being considered for a higher position, one that should have a high bar for qualification. On the other hand, many states have civil forfeiture laws that enable the government to take their car, their house, or other property merely because they are accused of a crime. That truly is guilt before trial, but the GOP doesn't seem to have much to say about that subject other than their robotic recitation, "This is America." America is many things.
Can I agree? Or go ahead.
I was want to mention that the Twitter world was going crazy last night because at the Trump rally, there remained those chants of lock her up, which is a classic lack of due process law, harking back to poor Hillary Clinton, at a time when the president is talking about the importance of due process.
So I wanted to agree entirely with the civil forfeiture part of that email. I mean, it's disgraceful that it's, you know, still goes on. But I will disagree with the idea that no one is proposing to take anything away from Kavanaugh. I mean, I've seen people say that he should be impeached from his current position. Mm-hmm. He lost the class he was teaching at Harvard. There was a USA Today op-ed piece that said he shouldn't be allowed to coach girls basketball anymore. So, and he's also lost, you know, the freedom to be able to move around without being, you know, yelled at.
And not only that, Chris, I think you make a point, but let's remember that he's on the second highest court in the land.
Right.
So it's not as if, you know, he's giving out traffic tickets. That's a major job he's got.
Right. And if he shouldn't be on the Supreme Court, the logical next step is to say, well, he shouldn't have the job that he has either, right? I mean, it's less important, but not that much less important.
You are right. Kavanaugh hearing. The silver lining of the Kavanaugh hearings is that young girls now know what should be unacceptable behavior and how the deck is stacked against them. There is nothing more empowering than knowing how even the most successful women have to suffer silently in shame and fear. I hope that all the boys, young boys, listen carefully to know what is dignity.
Yeah, this is like trying to turn around an oil tanker in, you know, shallow water of, you know, shifting social norms, how little boys are raised, what they're taught is right or wrong. And hopefully this is just the tip of the iceberg in what's probably going to be a very long social and cultural shift.
I think this younger generation of women has a far better appreciation for what's right, what's wrong, and I think young men as well. I am optimistic about what's going to happen in the years going forward. I think it's my generation that's got the problem.
Yeah.
That's the first optimistic set on this program in 2 years, Julie. Well done. Here, we'll mark that down. Good job.
Okay, and then we did that one already. Sorry about that. And I know that Amber is going to be coming in here any second now to give us an update on how much has been raised in the lockbox.
Okay.
Which needs to happen, you know, every 5 minutes. Okay. And then John says they have been fudging the jobs number since Moses talked to the burning bush. Look at the U6 jobs data, August at 7.4, which reflects everyone we know who is older than 40 and down on their luck, or a person of color.
Right, there's new jobs numbers coming out today, right?
Today, yeah. Yep.
Yeah. There are some, that's not entirely correct, that the U6 rate he's referring to includes unemployed workers, workers who have slowed down their job search, and workers who want full-time jobs but can only work part-time.
So it's
come down from like 18% during the height of the recession to 7.6% now is what the letter said.
So when we read today's figures, we should take it with a grain of salt?
No. I mean, looking at, you know, month-to-month movements can be a little misleading because there's always aberrations. You know, this is probably going to reflect a lot of hurricane-related job losses. So it'll be fundamentally different. I think the biggest thing to look for is what economists have been saying for years, and that is what's happening to wage growth.
Now, and we will see some numbers on that today.
Yes, that's correct.
And what do you expect? The last time it was very small amount of growth, correct?
Wage growth is starting to accelerate. I think it was 2.9% on an annualized basis last month. But the issue is that, you know, with an unemployment rate of, you know, 3.9%, normally in periods when we've had that in the past, wage growth is, you know, 4 to 5%. So something's happening where a scarcity of workers isn't leading workers to actually be able to demand and secure wage increases. And that can really hold back and hamper economic growth.
Is there not a lag, though, between the available, in other words, the available jobs going more full employment,
yeah,
and then wage growth? Doesn't it take a little time for one to catch the other?
Not in the past.
It's instantaneous.
It's not instantaneous, but we've had exceptionally low unemployment rates for almost 2 years now relative to
And we see Amazon, of course.
The past 15 years. So, you know, you would expect it to pick up a lot faster than it has.
And we see Amazon sending the signal, which is to raise it to $15 an hour, but at the same time, with the other hand, sending everybody. But the way we used to give you bonus incentives and other things, we're taking that away.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now let me just report on where we are.
Over there, sir.
And I am not apologetic about trying to make sure that this radio station survives. As you may remember, Ann Wydra of Ravenna put up $1,000, and now we have heard from Anne Marie Seri of Schenectady, New York, who said, all right, I'll match that. I'll put $1,000 in if we can make this. And I got to tell you, folks, we have a long way to go to $25,000. $3,000 is in. That means we need $22,000 right now in order to get $2,000 from our wonderful friends.
And now I would tell you that there are plenty of people in the front office now. If you want to call rather than online, this would be a good time to do it.
And that number is?
800-323-9262.
Where operators are standing by just like at Lewis Aluminum.
Right.
1-800-323-9262. Everybody's shrugging and saying, what's Lewis Aluminum?
Yeah.
Is that your brother's company?
No. No, my brother spells it L-E-W. This is, I believe, L-O-U. And it was, here I am, a fairly aged man.
Yeah.
And it was from my youth watching
TV.
And the two things that we used to watch were, of course, about Hoffman's is the
soda.
Drink. Hoffman's is the drink. For when you're thirsty, you don't have to go to university to know that and Lewis Aluminum,
right,
where operators were standing by.
Now, in the next half hour, Alan will do some references from I Married Joan. So make sure you listen.
I hated that show.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. So Anne Marie Seri says $1,000 doesn't come easy to anyone. And same thing from Anne Wydra. If you can just do it now, let's go. Come on, folks. We know we can do this. It's our station. Think about what you're getting from it. Think about why you're listening now. It's that simple.
And it is WAMC.org if you want to go online. Remember, there are still tickets available, although they are going fast, for the Roundtable Live on November 7th. That'll be discussed. It's the day after the midterms, and they'll be discussing the midterm elections. Judith Henk, Malcolm Nance, Sarah Rogerson, Jen Smith, David Soares, Alan Shartok, Mike Spain, along with Joe Donahue. And that's, I believe, $100 pledge or more per
ticket.
That's right.
Okay, so that's what we got so far. Did I read them all yet?
Okay.
We read them all.
Again, that number, if you want to make a pledge over the phone, is 800-323-9262. The lockbox is open. We start our fund drive on Monday the 15th. And the goal is to be halfway through. And, you know, the people will write every day and say, gosh, you know, you're interrupting the flow of the roundtable. We get it. But if we get halfway through the drive, the fun drive takes a day, maybe two, and then we're back to wall-to-wall regular programming.
And right now you're getting regular programming all day long, as opposed to when we come
Not
on.
Not quite. We'll have irregular programming at 9:30 when we have special coverage from NPR.
You're right.
All right, let's take a break here.
Okay, all right.
America's pal, Alan Shartok, is here. Yep. Chris Churchill is here from the Times Union. Judy Patrick is here from the New York Press Association, as well as Siena College Professor Aaron Pasitti. You're invited to join the conversation. Panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org if you want to write us in. We'll have another half hour of the panel, a little less after the news, and then we'll go to NPR special coverage at 9:30. Welcome back to the Roundtable on WAMC. Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue. 6 minutes after 9 o'clock, Friday morning, and the Roundtable panel already in full swing with Chris Churchill, Judy Patrick, Aaron Pasitti, and Alan Shartok. And we have a fun drive going on right now.
We do.
The lockbox thing.
We have the lockbox. We need to get halfway in the drive. We need to get up to the $500,000 mark. We're at $336,000, $336,291. That means we need about 160-something thousand to go to get where we are. Two wonderful.
To get to the halfway point.
That's right. To get to the 500,000.
Which is the halfway point in the drive.
Okay. So Anne Marie Seri said, I'll give 1,000. It's terrific. And Anne Wydra of Ravenna said she'd give 1,000. And the phones are lying fallow. Folks, I really do need some help here. We all need some help. It's our radio station. And people come up to me in the streets all the time and say it's the best in the nation. We really appreciate it. And whatever you can do now, It's Alan. I'm asking you. I'm saying, hey, this passion for this radio station is something. So if you can, would you please just get on a phone, 1-800-323-9262, 1-800-323-9262, and make that phone call or go to WAMC.org and we'll be saved. We have a long way to go. We need to make $22,000 right now.
So
we can do it. We can do it.
Let's do that. Tensions are high at the Capitol with opponents of Brett Kavanaugh, including survivors of sexual assault, confronting senators in the halls and holding vigils across the street at the Supreme Court. Supporters of Kavanaugh have also turned out. A hefty police presence added an air of anxiety, as did thousands of anti-Kavanaugh demonstrators. U.S. Capitol Police said 302 people were arrested, among them comedian Amy Schumer, distant relative of Chuck Schumer of New York. And what happened?
Okay, I just want to know. I've been corrected on, and the last thing I want to do is bite the hand that is feeding us, who is Anne Marie. Sorry, it's
Sarah.
I've been saying Sari, but it's S A with an accent de goo over it, R E. I think that's an accent de goo. Is it?
Looks like it.
Looks like it.
Could just be a stray mark, but
I think it's Sarah. I believe. Note to producer: don't do French accents on notes you hand to Alan.
Right.
That's fine.
That's right.
Thank you.
Thank you for that.
The email address here is panel at yes.
Sarah.
Correct. Thank you very much. Sarah.
Sarah.
Like survey said.
Sarah.
The email address is panel@wamc.org, and I guess we have some letters.
Oh, we do. Thank you for that. And Rob from Silver Lake says, my thanks to the panel for enlightenment and entertainment over the summer. I'm 68 years old, traveling camp host, and you've been just one more reason I've fallen for Vermont. Can you imagine the public relations and outrage to Trumpism and the Kavanaugh crier 40 years ago? We're going in the wrong direction at an exceptional rate. Since the rules of law and common decency seem to no longer apply, I'm considering starting the Edward Abbey Anarchist Party and just do as I damn well please after I vote. That's from Rob. Mandy says, the little lies matter. How many kegs Kavanaugh drank in high school and similar minutiae like the meaning of foolish, obnoxious things in his yearbook were not important until Kavanaugh made them important. By lying about these things, he had to have decided that they were significant enough to commit perjury over. I prosecuted sexual assaults and other crimes, and as Judge Kavanaugh better know, the thing that turns lies into perjury is their materiality to the matter at hand. He must have seen these things as corroboration of Dr. Ford and Ms. Ramirez's allegations or something equally serious, and that's Mandy from Wales. And Marty says, the bare minimum, a prior writer indicated there was nothing he or she could do about our political situation except wait until voting day. I would like to add there's an entire month before the election, and there are tons of volunteer opportunities in local campaigns. Phone banking, letters to the editor, postcards, etc., all can be done from home also. Voting is the bare minimum, and we need to do more than that if we want to save our country. And Dale says, the diatribe. Calling Donald Trump's diatribe against Dr. Ford at his rally before a mass of cheering fans, mockery is too mild. The president of the United States at his high podium was engaged in hate speech. Not race-based hate speech, but gender-based hate speech. This made it clear that we are faced with a mass movement that chooses, that prefers, and that gets their kicks from hostility and hatred. This has made me very nervous, no matter how the Senate vote goes. Well, that's a very good point, isn't it, gang, in terms of the division of the country now?
You know, what made that hate, that rally and the mockery there more astounding to me was the fact that the White House and Republican senators came out in favor and said, no, he wasn't mocking. Just not even to admit that he was mocking was, I thought, an insult to...
And he sent Sarah Sanders out to say he wasn't mocking.
No, he was just reciting the facts. Well, he was mocking her. Let's not kid ourselves.
Yeah. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, I was just going to say one of the most distressing things about this whole thing, and there are many distressing things about this whole thing, is just that it has really laid the partisanship really bare. I mean, it's hard to find a Democrat who doesn't, you know, see it one way, or a Republican who doesn't see it the other way, and you know, I just well, I think we knew partisanship was really bad, but it's maybe even worse than we thought.
And why is that? Is it because Donald Trump has done so much to inflame the Democrats to the point that, you know, they have to, I mean, it's not as if it's terrible we have partisanship, but there are some reasons.
I mean, partisanship on its face isn't that bad. It's just when the other side is always characterized as, you know, Cory Booker said anyone who votes for Kavanaugh is complicit in evil. You know, like that those kind of statements are just way, way, way over the top. Donald Trump has made it worse. And he kind of, I don't know if he's the symptom or the cause. It's kind of hard to suss out sometimes. But it's definitely getting worse.
I don't know if. Partisanship is the right word as much as it is polarization, that you have, mm-hmm. you know, these...
Right, that might be better. Or tribalism.
Tribalism. You know, the gap between both parties now is just getting wider and wider and wider, and that eliminates any hope of compromise or, you know, bipartisanship. But when you talk about partisanship, remember, you know, Bill Clinton passed NAFTA, which had, you know, dramatic negative effects on manufacturing workers' wages. He got rid of... He made welfare contingent on work requirements. So to the degree that there's polarization, it's been polarization to the right, where the right has managed to pull a lot of Democrats who might have been, you know, middle of the road leftists to more center, you know, neoliberal policies. So the fact that there's polarization coming up with, you know, the Sanders Warren contingent of the Democratic Party, for progressives, that's really good news. But it also, you know, really eliminates any, I don't know, common ground that each party can find. And I think the Kavanaugh case is a great example of that.
It's worth pointing out, too, that there is still a huge chunk of people in the middle. I mean, if you look at the numbers, it's something like 25%, according to the latest Gallup poll, are Democrats, 24% are Republicans. There's still a big chunk of people in the middle. And if you look at the polling of independents, even on the Kavanaugh thing, they're pretty split. It's just that the voices that we hear on TV or in the parties are so polarized.
Right. Yes, my statement had nothing to do with voters. It has to do with the policies that are being proposed in Congress and what you're hearing on television.
Well, as long as you guys are being so namby-pamby about the whole thing and, you know, partisanship is bad. I'm not quite through yet, Chris.
There's nothing wrong with having strong opinions and strong political beliefs. It's just that when you see the other side as evil or automatically lying, I think that's when, it all breaks down.
You don't think Donald Trump is evil?
I don't call anybody evil. I mean...
What about Alan?
I do see horns underneath that hat.
You mean, well, Shartok, as you know, in Russian, is little devil.
Yes.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that explains a lot.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so therefore, my question is I see Trump as being very evil to the American body politic. I think he's leading us into a terrible predicament. I look at who his friends are around the world. I look at the dictators and the rest of it. I don't want any part of it. So I resent, you know, this panel coming up with their namby-pamby, always we have all of this, you know.
We're about to sing Kumbaya, and then you get rid of it.
I don't know if evil is the word as much as it is toxic. Because you can look at a lot of presidential decisions, you know, like, you know, the war on terror. That was borderline evil. I think Trump is more toxic in that he's kind of poisoning the public dialogue in terms of legitimating being able to say certain things in public that were really just not acceptable 2 years before. So maybe that is evil. I kind of see that as toxic.
I accept your amendment.
But and when you use the term evil, it is polarizing.
Sure it is.
You really have
tough
to have,
darts. It's true.
We're not going to get anywhere that way. You really have to have discussions. You have to look at both sides. You have to think about his strategy. I mean, you have to keep. I mean, I think over the course of history, there have been evil people. I think maybe Trump may be toxic or destructive at this point. But I don't. I think people aren't going to listen to either side knowledgeably unless they have an open mind about it.
Yeah, well, I think, first of all, I don't think they do have an open mind about it. And secondly, I do remember Franklin Roosevelt's time. He came
you
into.
You do remember Franklin
Yeah,
Roosevelt's
I'm old
time.
Now.
Yeah,
very
he
old.
Remembers Millard Fillmore's time.
I tell my students I was alive during World War II. They don't believe me. But the truth is that we have a situation where Roosevelt comes into office. You had the reactionaries owning the Supreme Court and other things, and Roosevelt had to deal with them in order to get this country back and moving. And yes, and he did. And they were evil in my mind.
I think it's a lot of the Republican Party that is just. Their policy now is just a lie. We're going to make healthcare more affordable for Americans by right. dismantling part of the Affordable Care Act. And that is just such a bald-faced lie that, like, if it wasn't so serious, people would be laughing. The whole, you know, these tax cuts are going to increase wage growth. These tax cuts are going to increase jobs. These tax cuts are going to increase
unemployment's
business.
Unemployment's down, right?
Unemployment's down, but that, you know, it's been going down since 2009.
Don't we want to see if the wages increase? Don't we want to see those numbers?
I checked 2.8%, and the unemployment rate is down to 3.7%.
Which is an all-time
low. How much that has to do with the tax cut, I think, is still to be determined because it hasn't been that much time. But, there have been a lot of tax cuts like the one Trump has proposed, and it's all, you know, going back to Reagan. And then you had Bush's 2001, 2003 tax cuts. None of those did anything to stimulate job growth. What you had was Bill Clinton raising taxes in the late 90s, and then you saw the economy accelerate. So the relationship between tax cut and growth is minimal to the extent that it's existent at all. What it does is it just retransfer wealth from one group in the U.S. to another.
You really do bring me back to that classroom all those years ago at Hunter College where the teacher was wearing a smock. I'll never forget it.
A smock.
So I'm not wearing one.
No, you're not. But that guy was wearing...
You should be. Why aren't you?
That guy was wearing a smock.
Why?
And was this art class?
Yeah.
No, it was economics class. It was economics class. Okay, so I just want to remind everybody.
Why was he wearing a smock?
Yeah, let's. I want answers, Alan.
Smock.
Stop being evil.
I don't
finish
know,
the story.
As Steve Allen used to say. Okay, I don't know, but I.
So it really has nothing to do with it.
No, it has everything to do with it.
I thought you were making a Maoist sort of.
I was listening to Aaron, profoundly impressed by what he was saying and how he was saying it, and all of a sudden my mind just went back to Hunter College, you know, in the Bronx, sitting there in. Sitting there and listening to this, you know, to the economics professor who is wearing a smock.
You are waxing nostalgic.
Can I only say that we're down to $15,000 now. We only have how many minutes?
We have to leave in 9 minutes.
Okay, come on, everybody. This is serious stuff, really serious. It's our station. Ray told me that when I came in, I was eating a pretzel. Don't eat pretzels before you go on the
That's
air.
Correct,
because
sir.
Your voice will go, you know, crack and all the rest of it. Guess who it was who coughed? Uncle Ray himself.
But I'm not eating pretzels.
But you are doing something
pretzels
else.
Pretzels make you sound crummy.
That's funny.
That's
okay,
one.
Kathy writes, here's the thing. I can't concede that both parties work to turn this whole thing into a circus. No, I can concede that both parties work to turn this whole thing into a circus. But Mr. Kaye's job was simple. Behave like a mature judicial adult, showing faith in the facts, submit to a polygraph, call for a full and thorough investigation, ensure that all parties are consulted, quietly and respectfully demand that justice show its face. However, he chose not in capital letters to do that. He showed us who he is. That is the issue, says Catherine. For Catherine. Okay. Naomi says, without a full investigation, good morning, our very early panel. Without a full investigation to everyone with information on Kavanaugh, the Republicans are going to put this unsuitable person onto the Supreme Court for life. When the House flips, I hope they can open a full and thorough investigation on Kavanaugh and then get rid of him. That ain't going to happen. In other words, once it's done, that ain't going to happen. You'd have to impeach him. And I doubt very much that would happen.
And would that be good for the country? Really, at some point, you have to think, how can we start to heal and move forward?
You know, Judy, that's a very good point, because there are people who are convinced that to this day, the extreme partisanship comes over, guess what, the impeachment, the threatened impeachment of Richard Nixon. So, there are people who never forget this stuff, and it goes on. Anyway, Peter says, Kavanaugh... Ugh. Kavanaugh. Y'all want your myopic caveman decision to come from a nicer person. Bart is a robot, and like any other nominee, would vote exactly the same. Oh, yeah, we did this one. Peter and Clinton.
Well, you read it here to us, but I don't think you read that
Peter
over
and
there.
Clinton. Okay.
Yeah. The email address is panel@wamc.org. And in the waning moments here.
We only have about, oh my God, we have about $14,000 to go, $13,000 now to go. Can everybody get to a thing and save us, please? 1-800-323-9262.
Or you can go online and it'll count. WAMC.org is the website.
And everything between now and the end counts, by the way.
The end of what?
The end of the world. No, the end of this panel.
Okay.
Discussion.
And actually, that is now coming up on 6 minutes until the end of the panel. I'm counting in any way, but.
And do we have to stay here until you reach the 13,000?
Yes, you do,
Judy.
Do we
have to stay in the room?
Yes, you do. Yes, yes.
With no food and no water.
Yeah. There'll be no food and water.
So we really don't have a lot of time to take up another topic.
Well, go ahead. We'll try.
I don't know. Should we? You want to talk about tech stocks, China tech stocks going down on the heels of the word about the little microchip thrown on some of the devices?
Well, here's what happened. China does all the microchips for the world. Okay, everybody has a computer, the microchip in it. So everybody thought that since that was such a great way of their making money, that they wouldn't dare, do espionage through their main project. Wrong.
Chinese tech stocks, Lenovo Group and ZTE, tumbled in Hong Kong today following news reports Chinese spies might have used chips supplied by another company to hack into U.S. computer systems. Bloomberg News cited unidentified U.S. officials as saying malicious chips were inserted into equipment supplied by Supermicro Computer to American companies and government agencies.
Well, now, both Apple and Amazon are saying that's not true. They're discounting the story. When you read these stories carefully, you're trying to figure out, well, is this true or
They're
not?
They're saying that they've looked into those chips and that they know that they are not being used for Chinese espionage.
That they are not on the motherboards that they have searched. And they've been quite clear about the fact that it's not true. So Bloomberg has an anonymous source, and that's the only source at this point. So.
Meanwhile, Vice President Mike Pence charged Thursday that Russia's influence operations in America pale in comparison with the covert and overt activities China is taking to interfere in the U.S. midterm elections and counter President Trump's tough trade policies against Beijing.
And if anybody thinks that this isn't scarier than hell, they're wrong. Because it leads to things not only economically, but you just saw what happened, in the China Sea there with the two ships going at each other. Okay, let's assume that there was, and let's assume this guy who's always trying to deflect any kind of attention for bad things, our president, now says, okay, shoot him down or get him. And he's already talking about bringing in a lot of ships and other things now in a real show of force.
In the South China Sea,
That's
which is
right.
obviously disputed. Most of the rest of the world thinks China does not own the South China Sea.
But they do. De
facto at this point.
Yeah. No. Oh, here comes Amber. Thank goodness.
You got 3 minutes left Chief.
Okay. Now we need just $15,000 to make it in the next 3 minutes. Somebody got 15 grand? It would be good. Go ahead, Ray.
WAMC.org is the website. If you want to make a pledge, everything will count.
And what's the number again?
800-323-9262 is the number. Anybody else want to weigh in here on anything at all in the last 2 minutes?
I think those stories need to be read carefully, too. When I read the Pence story, I'm looking for someone from the National to step forth and verify, this is what we found. And the question is this just trying to take the spotlight off Russia or something else that happened? I think China can be a bad actor, but how bad an actor is yet to be determined. And I'm not hearing from our national security officials that this is as bad as what the vice president is saying.
It's so interesting because we get these counter narratives all the time. So we get the president of the United States saying, Russia, good, looked into his eyes, great guy, Putin and all the rest of it. And then when you turn the corner, you're seeing people lower down in his own administration indicting another dozen Russians. So you say, well, okay, haven't they got the memo? Or don't these people speak in one voice? The answer is no. And I think that may be accidentally on purpose.
And in the meantime, you've got the Secretary of State headed to Korea, correct, sometime this week, and whether or not he's going to be able to come away with an agreement.
Well, maybe now that they haven't given the Nobel Prize to Trump, maybe now, he'll turn around.
And for the record, they gave the Nobel Prize to two people who have worked to combat war crimes that involve sexual assault, which is a really important story, and I hope it's more than just a one-day story.
Yeah. What are their names again, Judy?
Oh. Curse you, Shartok.
Well, that's something I say little, almost every hour.
Little devil.
Thank you very much. All right, Alan, you have 1 minute and 12 seconds to make your final pitch here on the Fun Drive Lockbox Challenge, and then we got to go to special coverage from NPR.
I'm looking forward to everybody just doing anything they can. We have these wonderful challenges from Anne Wydra and Anne Marie Serre. Thank you, Ray. And it's all up to us to keep it going. You know, if you love it, why not do something? I mean, to me, it's very frustrating not to understand why. Boom. Okay, let's fill up the lockbox. Boom. Everybody does it. I'm just hoping that everybody gets the message and says, yeah, I have to do something. That's great.
WAMC.org if you want to make your pledge, or you can call us at 800-323-9262, 800-323-9262. Chris Churchill, thanks for being here, sir.
Oh, thank you.
Judy Patrick, thank you very much, and you were easy on Alan today. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Aaron Pacitti, you were late, but you did well.
Yes.
Thank you all for being here. And once again, feed the lockbox if you can at WAMC.org. Now, we will be breaking from our usual programming to take you to live NPR coverage. The cloture vote on the Kavanaugh nomination scheduled for 10:30. NPR coverage begins at 9:30. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.
Felix Mendelssohn, October 12th. Tickets at clarkart.edu. And Leafpeeper Concerts, presenting the Amarnet Quartet with Eugenia Zuckerman, playing music from Beethoven to Gina Stera at St. James Place, Great Barrington, October 13th at 5 p.m., leafpeeperconcerts.org.
This is special coverage from NPR News. I'm David Green in Culver City, California.
And I'm Steve Inskeep in Washington, D.C. Senators are gathering to vote this morning at the U.S. Capitol on the first step toward confirming Judge Brett Kavanaugh to a seat on the U.S. Supreme Court. Kavanaugh, as you may recall, was headed for a contentious but likely confirmation until he was accused of sexual assault and other sexual misconduct while in high school and college. The process had been paused for an FBI investigation, which was also contentious, but now the vote is going ahead. We have a vote today on what's called cloture. That's essentially to end debate, and they are doing the preliminaries right now. There's an invocation being read on the Senate floor, even as we speak. We're going to hear over the next hour or so some concluding speeches by a number of key senators, and then we're going to be live with you as the senators vote about 1 hour from now. We have many correspondents on this story, including NPR's Nina Totenberg, who has covered the Supreme Court as well and as long as about anybody we could think of. And Nina, I'm trying to recall something from the Clarence Thomas nomination in 1991. There are many parallels drawn. There's a story told, Clarence Thomas tells a story of asking a senator, Orrin Hatch, one of the senators who will also vote today, am I going to get through this? And Hatch was able to tell him, it's going to be close, but yes, you're going to get through, which in fact happened. It feels a little different today. We're going into this vote not entirely knowing what could happen.
No. At the White House, their spokesperson seemed very confident, or it's a bluff. It's really hard to know sometimes. You know, there are four votes here that could swing this thing one way or the other. Lisa Murkowski from Alaska, Susan Collins from Maine, Joe Manchin, a Democrat, unlike the two women senators, a Democrat from West Virginia, and Jeff Flake, Republican from Arizona. And Jeff Flake has signaled in all kinds of ways that he's likely to vote for the nominee.
He said that he thought the FBI report was, that there was no corroboration of the accusations against Kavanaugh in that report.
Lisa Murkowski has sort of kept her own confidence. I don't think you can read those tea leaves very clearly. She is a person known for her independence. In fact, once when she was denied the Republican nomination, she ran as an independent in a write-in campaign and was elected. So she knows how to say, I'm going to do what I want to do, and too bad for the rest of you.
Uh-huh.
What a poet I am. And